I'll speak to you now for a little while, if I may, in terms of the meditations themselves. During this period, initial period, I'll speak about the sitting posture, method and technique. And then at the end period of the sitting, I'll talk to you about the walking and standing and reclining meditation. And these are the four postures that as human beings we find ourselves in regularly, sitting, walking, standing and reclining. Each one of them is worthy of giving real care and attention. All of them matter equally, and of course our daily life is often spent in one of those four postures or moving between one of those four postures. So a spiritual life which is grounded and centered does give care and attention to the body and does give care and attention to the posture, whether sitting cross-legged, whether kneeling, whether using a chair or whatever. So with regard to the sitting posture, it is helpful and useful when you come in to sit in the meditation hall here to use some aspects of it. One of them is the straight back, and that often takes a little time for those who are all too familiar with using armchair existence. And so sometimes some of the back muscles are a little weak, and it's certainly worthwhile to contribute to strengthening the back muscles. And one way to do that is just to sit with the back straight. The simple measure and yardstick that is support for that is that when we just move the hips forward a little bit, what we notice is that as we move the hips forward, the body straightens up, there is some expansion in the spine and in the stomach diaphragm area, and quite quickly the back is quite straight. And that posture we wish to develop and encourage through the time that we are here. And quite often in the matter of a few days, lots of strength can come to the back, and that takes a lot of pressure off other parts of the body. May be quite difficult to sustain that posture for any length of time, and it's really practice that does that. Sometimes outside of the sitting hall, it's useful to bend and stretch a little bit, and again helping with the sitting posture. In terms of awareness of body, also creating and making time here as well as elsewhere for some kind of movement and exercise. And in terms of awareness of bodily life, three important things to bear in mind. One of them is diet, two is posture, and three is exercise. And so much difficulty in physical life arises through the neglect of one, two, or three, or all of them. So here, of course, in terms of diet, we have a vegetarian diet, very nutritious diet, and one of the things which takes place regularly is that people come on retreats and enjoy the diet, and also part of the effect of that for some people and a growing number is to become a vegetarian. And for this, of course, the animal, birds and fish are extremely grateful, and your support to their welfare. They could speak, they would sing your praises. So in a few days, sometimes people have some reflections on their diet and the value of, I say, of a solid vegetarian diet. And in the sitting of posture, it exercise is another important feature. And in England, if I may say, just on that point, the government are so concerned about people's ill health. Well, actually, I think they're concerned not really about people's ill health, they're concerned about the cost to the government of people's ill health. And particularly heart attacks and cancer, prostate cancer for men, etc., etc. And they've been conducting these tests about men who are aged over 50, and they want people, adults, particularly in that age group, as well as younger, to do what they call one unit of exercise per day. And a unit is 20 minutes, in which the heartbeat beats faster than usual. See, the only time this happens is when people are watching these horror movies these days. So, and that's not considered the same thing. And the doctor was telling me that some people are saying, I can't remember the last time I did anything that made the heart beat faster. Never do any fast walking, never do any gardening, never do any yoga, never do any jogging, never do anything. So these things for our own health and welfare, worth considering: diet, exercise and posture. But all those three together can contribute to a much healthier organic life. In the sitting posture, it doesn't matter at all whether you use a chair, whether you sit cross-legged, or whether you kneel, that there is no relationship between wisdom and the shape of your legs. The Buddhist tradition often forgets this. And if you are using a chair, then my suggestion is not to lean into the back of the chair. One is trying to develop a relationship with oneself and not with the back of the chair. Some people, however, do have some history of back problems or injuries or whatever. Then, yes, fine, take care with the posture, use the support of the back of the chair or whatever. But if one knows one hasn't, then we would like to encourage you to give the back the opportunity to strengthen itself. If you're feeling awake, then the eyes can be closed. If you're feeling rather tired for many reasons, then the eyes can be open. And with the attention, with the mindfulness of breathing, it's to make contact as much as possible with the whole of the breath, all of the breath. So that means that when we begin to breathe in, we feel the air element coming up through the nose, going down into the lungs, and experiencing the body changing as we inhale. As we inhale, there is some expansion of the body. We do experience the lungs expanding. As we breathe in, as we breathe out, we feel some contraction and settling down. And the primary focus and attention is giving the attention to breathing, to sit on this earth, simple, basic, down-to-earth actuality of a living organism on this earth, breathing in and breathing out and being focused and steady with it. So much of our roles, our identities, our nationality, our gender, our makeup of our mind, our personality or whatever, rather allowing that as much as possible to fade away. There's just the bare human being, the bare experience, sitting and being here right now, breathing in and breathing out. It's that simple. It's that bare an actuality. In that, being in touch with the bare actuality of our breathing experience, it doesn't matter whether your breath is long or whether it's short, deep or shallow. Main thing is connection with it. Main thing is being in touch with the raw experience of breathing life. There. It isn't necessary. Focus on the rise and fall of the abdomen, you know, or on the tip of the nose, or in a kind of concentrated way. As the Buddha said, His own words are, when one is breathing in, one is mindful and aware when the breath is long, and one is breathing out, if the breath is long, or if the breath is short or shallow. So we are aware of the condition of the breathing, of the breath coming and going, and being as clear about it as much as possible. Sometimes it will seem a miracle if you are aware of two consecutive breaths during the course of the sitting. It's an easy instruction to give, it's a tough and difficult practice to apply, but it's a wonderful training for the mind, for harmony, for focus, for presence, and to get really established in the here and now, which is a key feature of these teachings. In being in contact with the breath, sometimes the mind wanders very, very quickly. Daydreams, fantasies, personal storylines, remembering, endless planning, and it can be a rude shock to oneself to realize how much of one's life is spent not in immediate reality, but in virtual reality. And even that's a compliment. So sometimes one sees how much imagination, fantasies, stories, a dream world is going on, and we can spend much of our life in all of that. So teachings are get in touch with the bare existence, bare actuality, being on this earth, breathing in and out, and to keep quietly and in a disciplined way returning our attention to the bare actuality of breathing, breathing organic life. There will be times in our life, in our daily life, where this will be vitally important, and one can almost say with a guarantee, when we're under pressure, when we're in fear, when we're beset with pain, when we're in grief, when we're angry, when somebody is blaming us, when we're attacked by the local dog, or whatever, remembering to breathe in and out can help keep us focused and clear, relaxed and present. So mindfulness of breathing is a practice for clarity and steadiness in the face of the difficult as well as the easy. In the mindfulness of breathing, usually there are two forms of experience that people report that are the most can be the most difficult. One, of course, is the restlessness and pain. So you are sitting, and then after a few minutes, if you're lucky, it goes a few minutes that some pain will arise in the body. That pain can arise anywhere in the body. So probably the most popular places are the back, the knees and the ankles. And the pain arises, the breath itself, especially the outgoing breath, the exhalation, can be a help to relax with pain. So again, usually for most people, we know we just change the posture and the pain disappears. That may not always be the case in all of life. It may not be the case to some people here. So again, the breath serves as a helpful resource for us. So we breathe in, we've got pain in the body somewhere, we relax into the pain, we breathe out in a relaxed way, breathing in, breathing out in a relaxed way. And this can make a real contribution to actually expanding our pain horizons. And sometimes we have a very low threshold of pain. Soon as little pain comes, we're zooming off down the pharmacist or reaching in the cabinet for paracetamol or whatever it might be. Sometimes that might be appropriate and necessary, but sometimes we're not giving ourselves the opportunity to actually work with painful feelings, sensations that are arising in the body. And therefore our meditation practice is real contribution to letting the energy flow right through pain that arises. As I say, there'll be times in life when one is extremely grateful for this practice. In the sometimes the restlessness arises as well. So you perhaps have read some of these books on meditation, and then that dreadful word bliss has got associated with it, and one thinks, oh, I'll go off to the Negev and have 5 days of unbroken bliss. I mean, if that was the case, I tell you, half the Middle East would be here, as well as the rest of the planet. So sometimes we have this idea, meditation, oh, it's going to be bliss, bliss, all the way. Usually one sitting cures that thought. So again, with the sitting meditation and the practice with the meditation, there it might be pain and restlessness arises, and we experience the contrast of a lot of movement that's perhaps gone on before. Busy life, social life, working life, study life, family life, etc. And so we come and we sit. It is a big contrast from daily life. So that when you sit, suddenly there's a lot of restlessness coming out. And that's because prior, before coming here, one was rather busy, and one stops. And then the restlessness is still going on. It's like the car engine. You know, it sometimes gets, those of us who have old cars know only too well, been driving the car on a hot day, you turn the engine off, at least you turn the key off, and the car heat is still ticking on, the engine is still hot and ticking over. It's a little bit like that here for some people. So again, be patient, hang in, stay steady with it, especially using the outgoing breath to relax into the moment, into the here and now, and gradually a bit more coolness will settle in with regard to the sitting posture. It's a practice, remember. Like many things which are important in life, it can be a little difficult. The other difficulty which people experience and talk about is tiredness. Sometimes there's a physical tiredness, and that can be due to travel, it can be due to time of the month, it can be due to a new sleeping place, different climate, sharing a room with others, health issues, lifestyle issues, etc. So sometimes we arrive on a retreat and all prepared for awakening, and we find we seem to be engaged in a practice of sleepening. And again, in the sitting, quite easily, one is sitting just for a few minutes, and then one is sleep would be an understatement. It's a coma, and one's totally exhausted, etc. Again, sometimes tiredness is there, and not always easy. Keeping the eyes open is a contribution. Sometimes it's placing the hands on top of the head. Sometimes it's breathing in a little bit longer and deeper. All of this can help just to stimulate cellular life, so that if we're feeling tired, hopefully we can just work our way through it. Sometimes one is too tired, open the eyes, that centimeter distance is much too far, and so sometimes in the sitting one falls asleep, no problem. Some of us have some very good naps in the meditation halls around the world, etc. But actually, as we had at the 7 o'clock sitting, sometimes people are advertising the fact that they're asleep right across the Negev Desert, they're advertising it. So again, out of great compassion, wishing to contribute to the full awakening of another person, the one who is sitting nearest to the great snorer of all time, can just give that person a gentle touch on the knee to bring them back to the fullness of existence. So as I say, sometimes sometimes regularly, people fall asleep in the sitting, etc. So restlessness is one feature, waves of tiredness is the other, and as I mentioned, it takes a little mindfulness, a little patience, a little steadiness, a little resolution to actually work with these two features which influence the quality of our inner life. There. In the sitting meditation, finally, as I said, the fullness of care and attention to the breathing experience. Sometimes, and there are some of you who are familiar with other forms of meditation method and technique, mantras, visualizations, concentration exercises, tip of the nose or whatever, all of course helpful and useful. But our request is here that while you are here, please just to follow the meditation instructions which are given. Sometimes the thought arises in the mind, oh, my mantra is much easier, I'll go back to saying Buddho, 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 or Alo, 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 or something like that. And our request is to let go while here, just to do the instructions. And if you go elsewhere to another teacher and teachings, please follow her or his meditation instructions. Don't cling to the old. Very much part of the practice is not clinging, not holding on to what was. What is what matters. So therefore we ask full care and attention with the meditation instructions there. Our mind easily and more often seems to wander on the exhalation, so it is worthwhile giving a little bit more care and attention to the exhalation. And if we do that, we'll probably find we are in touch with mindfulness of breathing, consciousness of breathing, giving attention to breathing more easily, because we give a little extra to the exhalation, the outgoing breath there. So let's have a sitting for 15 or 20 minutes, and then at the end of the sitting I'll speak to you about the meditations in the standing, walking and reclining posture. The walking is much slower than usual speed of walking. We just require a short distance for walking up and down, 10 meters, 15 meters, it's plenty. And it's a real meditation in itself. With the walking, we are placing the primary attention of the contact of each foot as it touches the ground, whether one is barefooted or using shoes, socks or whatever. And when the foot touches the ground, we're aware of that experience. We're not thinking about it or comparing it or judging it, but just aware of the foot touching the ground, any pressure there, and the weight of the foot, the sensations, the vibrations, the contact of the foot with the ground, and then the other foot, it comes up, it moves through the air, it touches the ground. We're aware of those vibrations, sensations, so that it contributes, in fact, to genuine harmony of body and mind. So instead of the body doing one thing, mind thinking and dwelling and caught up in other things, it's contributing to dissolving that separation of mind and body and feeling a greater sense of harmony, and that comes through practice. And therefore, putting the interest and the connection with one foot at a time, each foot as it comes up moves through the air, touching the ground. When it touches the ground, you're aware of it, and then a moment or two later the next foot starts, and then you're aware of that, and one just engages in the meditation for the 40-45 minute period of them. If you find that you're getting lost and caught up in a storyline, soap opera or whatever, then just to stop for a moment or two, be still for a moment, recollect being here and now, being in the present moment in harmony with life, and once again just engaging in the walking meditation. Also, during the day there are a couple of standing meditations. The standing meditations can be in here in the meditation hall or outdoors. The eyes can be open or closed with the standing meditation, to be aware of the 2 feet touching the ground, feeling the direct immediate experience of that. The 2 hands, one can be on the abdomen, stomach area, the other hand on top. So it's a mindful, restful, upright posture, contributing again to harmony of body and mind, and just standing on this earth, being present to standing. Standing in the hearing now, standing for peace, standing in awareness, just standing. If, again, discomfort arises, sometimes people report lower back or ankles, knees or whatever, yes, of course, bend the knees or stretch the back a moment or two, and then return back to the original standing posture. And there are plenty of times, I'm sure, when we're standing in a queue, we're standing waiting for the bus or the train, standing outside of the cafe waiting for a friend to arrive, etc. Rather than building up pressure, demand, impatience, agitation, let's make those times in our life when we are standing to make it a standing meditation. Yeah. Wonderful thing if we could see in railway stations people doing their walking and standing meditation instead of getting negative and angry, because especially with British Rail it turns up when it feels like it. So again, it's all a practice of using situations here for daily life for more mindful and meditative awareness there. There is also the reclining posture, and with the reclining posture, obviously times when we lie down at night, and quite often there are a number of people who are coming to retreats who have a lot of difficulty getting off to sleep at night, and many physical, biological as well as emotional factors can make that transition from wakefulness to sleep rather difficult. And the meditations themselves can help a great deal. Sometimes people do need to check, small thing, but do need to check in their daily life, you're having sleep, things that can help. And sometimes, for some people, it's the direction that one is sleeping in. Sometimes it's what one is sleeping on. These things can affect diet, of course, can have a significant effect on energy and restfulness and sleep, etc. With the sleeping posture, with the horizontal posture, the lying down posture, to keep the body perfectly still, maximizing relaxation. And so if you're taking some rest on the lawn or in your room, the straight posture, very, very still, totally relaxed, so that if the intention in this case was to go to sleep and one can't, at least there's plenty of relaxation of the whole body. Mind isn't fighting with itself or with the body there. Same meditation, of course, can be used as a meditation for alertness and presence and stillness. So, but not to use a meditation hall for the reclining posture because of people falling asleep, etc., etc. So the four postures, sitting, walking, standing and reclining. Sitting and standing can be used in a meditation hall absolutely any time, doors always open. And the walking and reclining elsewhere.